This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Asking Gronk to math, that much like 11 is also a lot. What you laughing at, Dan Balgan?
Fitzy, man, we wait for the beat drop on this program on 4 o'clock.
You stepped on it, Nick.
Go back to bed and start the day over. Man,
I was so excited to get into the break that I know.
Should we run it over?
Let's start it over.
Run it again.
This is WEEI Afternoons.
Wait, what hour is it, guys?
I'm just kidding. Stevens
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
You know what? Can we just start the whole show over? Start the Tupac intro for crying out loud. I've had coaches start the whole damn thing over.
There,
man.
You go.
You're an hour and a half into practice. He doesn't like what he sees. We'll just start the whole thing.
Today's three-point stance is brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman.
7-7.
Hey, Ted, did you hear what Will Fleming said yesterday?
That's pretty good, though, Fitzy. Not going to lie. That was a good one there, bud.
Oh man, that was funny.
All right, we won't do another intro. We'll save all. We'll spare everyone.
Should we play 5 o'clock now? We got an hour to get it right.
Maybe so.
Anyway, that was Edelman, the Gronkosaurus, and of course Ninko on the Dudes on Dudes podcast, which is different than game from the people who brought you Games with Names. It's Dudes on Dudes, and last week they were talking about the, I guess Andy Hart believes they to be excessive anticipation and predictions for the New England Patriots coming up in the 2025 season. Ted, I know you and I are proud members of Camp 10 and 7. Others around us could be higher, 11 and 6, 12 and 5. Ninkovich was preaching the reality of going from 4 wins to 10 wins is such a massive leap. We should be happy with that if that is the apex of what this Patriots team that has been massively reconfigured this season is to achieve. From Mike Reese's notes Sunday at ESPN.com, the Patriots lead the league this year in roster turnover. Of the 90 people that will be wearing a Patriots jersey heading into camp in just a couple of weeks on July 23rd, 43 of the 90 are brand new to the New England Patriots,
which is
a massive, like, they turned half the damn team over, which I can understand. It being one of the major reasons why people are members of Camp Pump the Brakes. But this also from Mike Reese's Sunday column from the Entirely Sick Persons Network. Right now, your New England Patriots, what would you guess? What would you guess, fellas? What would you guess, audience at large? Of the 16 teams in the American Football Conference, where do you think the Patriots would be ranked in terms of best percentage to make the playoffs?
Well,
what do you think the average people, average fan would say?
The average fan, you know, probably 10 to 15%. If I had to guess, I think the expectations are low. The fan base strikes me as a fan base that is reluctant to really buy into Drake May, and that thus they are just, you know, they don't really know much about these free agents because they're not a lot of big names, other than Milton Williams, and so it's kind of, I think most people would say there's a slight chance they have a chance to make the playoffs, but I don't think anybody's really bullish on this team when it comes to just the overall fan base.
Amen. Yeah, Dan, where do you think this is coming from? Many in the media and some diehards that are saying like, oh, there's been such a good draft, such a good offseason. Mike Vrabel, Drake May, the return of McDaniels. This team is, 8, 9, 10, 11 wins in a trip to the playoffs. Forthcoming in 2025 versus, like Ted said, maybe perhaps among many a more tepid response in terms of how you think the team is going to do this season.
I think the national optimism that you're seeing is more from fans across the league who just expect a certain level of football from the New England Patriots. It's almost hard for people across the league to wrap their heads around the fact that the Patriots were a 4-win team and a cellar dweller for multiple seasons at a time. So I think a lot of the pre-putting pads on headlines have been outrageously positive and well-deserved for the Patriots. They hire their guy. They hire a former Patriot that's going to reestablish the culture, and then they're one of the most lauded teams in terms of their free agency and their draft. So I think people see a franchise with a pedigree for winning quickly turning the tide on what was just an era that they're trying to forget. Whereas we here who analyze this every single day and root for the team and watch every single movement and breath and Instagram photo of Drake May with his wide receivers realize there are more questions under the surface than maybe a couple of positive headlines will give you. So I think that's kind of where at least I see the discrepancy there.
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
No.
Okay. All right. So of your 16 teams in the AFC, the number one team, according to ESPN, with an 81% chance to make the playoffs would be the Buffalo Bills. Wow, over top of Kansas City. I guess I kind of took that for granted. Kansas City, 76%. Baltimore, 76%. And the Chargers at 60%. Then we start dropping down a little bit, blah, blah, blah. Your New England Patriots are 12th out of 16, according to their analytics, and their Breslow machines. The ESPN people have them at a 32% chance of making the playoffs, 12th out of 16 total. So that's technically less than a third, a third of the way to 100 there. 32% chance to make the playoffs this year, which kind of flies in the face of a lot of the national and local media optimism of 10-7, 11-6, 12-5, which, those numbers still seem wild to me as well. So, Ted, that seems kind of on par. That seems fair to you, even though massive roster turnover, like we said, great offseason and free agency, like Dan said, great draft, and, of course, third easiest schedule in the NFL.
They needed to churn this roster. It was a terrible roster.
Yeah.
43% of it's new, and it's – my guess is, there's only 53 guys on the active roster, so it's going to be more than two-thirds of the team at the end of the day. I think that it's going to be still standing when the dust settles right before week one of this season. But they upgraded probably 5-6 starters just on defense via their free agency signings. That's huge. They've upgraded their left tackle with the fourth overall pick and Will Campbell, which was huge. They've upgraded what was the worst wide receiver group in the NFL by bringing in Steph Diggs. And so we like to think that Drake May is going to have better, more quality coaching than he had last year. And so people that, that study football, that report on football, that their job is to just to give opinions on football, see this in a more optimistic way because of all those reasons. And you also look at, there's past history tells you, what did the 2001 Patriots do the year before? What did the 1999 St. Louis Rams do the year before 1990? There's teams go from being the worst to being the best all the time in this league. It's not the craziest thing in the world. So to suggest they can go from four wins to 10 wins that I'm suggesting, honestly, isn't the craziest idea. The Commanders last year had a new coach. They brought in 10 starters basically via free agency, and they drafted a quarterback that is an elite quarterback, and you saw what happened to them. It's not the craziest thing to think that the Patriots can have a big bounce back year when you factor all those things in.
No, I completely agree, and I think your difference between where you guys sit at 10 and where I would sit at 8 and 9 is that quarterback position that you're talking about. If you're going to tell me that Drake May is what Jaden Daniels was, absolutely sign up for 10 wins, a playoff spot, and a really intriguing 2025. I'm just going to need to see it before I adjust and give them those two extra wins, because Fitzy, I think your defensive additions and the fact that you added veterans raises your floor 2 to 3 wins automatically. I think your 6 to 7 win spot just with your defense and your coaching changes at minimum are great. Then if your offense gels and your quarterback starts to perform, which are the questions that I think we outlined last week as being the biggest ones to worry about, that's where all of a sudden 7 becomes 8, becomes 9, becomes 10, and we start talking about games in January.
Okay, so Ted, this is actually a great point, bringing up both the 2000 Patriots and then the 1998 Rams. Of course, everyone knows the 2000 Patriots, 5-11, and a grueling 5-11 it was. There were rumblings about Belichick being on the hot seat just a couple games in. to his second year as head coach. Before we get into the Rams and stuff, do you remember hearing any of that hubbub? Like, whoa, this. How are you feeling coming out of 2000, heading into 2001 with Bledsoe on the big deal, Belichick on the hot seat, and the media kind of wondering what the hell was going on?
It was that was not a popular hire. Bill was not a popular hire. I remember that like it was yesterday, just because of how it ended, I guess, in Cleveland, you know, and how it ended maybe in New York too. So there's a lot of questions about him. And then, the, you know, only having five wins in 2000. And I'll be honest, Drew was in a bad, just kind of a lot of interceptions. And it was not, the synergy between the head coach and the quarterback was not there. So we were not feeling very good about ourselves when it came to the start of the 0-2. We started the 0-1 season 0-2, you know. And so we were off to a bad start. And I'll never forget a conversation I had with RKK. He comes up to me on the sideline, and I asked him how he's doing, and he's like, you know, not good. And he points to the new stadium that was being built next to our practice field. Yeah. And he basically said, not a lot of people are signing up for season tickets. And then horseshoe up his ass, because we go on to win the Super Bowl and then become a dynasty, and now there was a waiting list for season tickets. So you talk about, I'll never forget that conversation I had with how it just turned so fast. But at that point, no one was feeling good about the future of the franchise. Until TB12 stepped on the field and we saw all that change.
If you don't get
season tickets that year, Ted, you guys were a grind to watch until you guys were awesome to watch.
I hear you, brother. Sorry about that.
If you don't get the quarterback play there, what is that season for the Patriots?
I don't think it's good, buddy.
Okay.
Is
it still competitive though?
Because of the defense we had.
Okay.
I think it would have been. And the offense just, you know what, we needed to win a lot of close games with the team we had. The margin for error was not great, and unfortunately the strength of Drew wasn't always necessarily late minute game. Like, you know, he's had some comeback wins, but managing the clock, making good decisions, being safe with the ball, Drew was like, I can fit it in there. And there was a lot of where Tom was, let's just take what they give us and let's just manage the clock, and that is what we needed at that position at that time, considering the personnel we had on offense and the personnel we had on defense.
1994, Drew Bledsoe, who led comebacks like the one against the Minnesota Vikings with 70 pass attempts in the game winner to Kevin Turner, was a hell of a lot different than 2001 Drew Bledsoe, who had taken quite a beating and had many more miles on those tires. And Ted, I think the point of the 1998 St. Louis Rams into the 1998 Rams is an awesome
99 Rams,
98 to the 99 Rams is a great one, because the 1998 Rams still had Ricky Prohl, Isaac Bruce, Azahir Akeem on the roster. They went 4-12. They were not very good. Then the next year, they absolutely ripped through the NFL to being one of the greatest offenses of all time, in winning one of the most thrilling Super Bowls of all time as well. And to your point of the Commanders, who a lot of people want to compare or at least hold as a comp for what they hope these New England Patriots can do in 2025 to last year's Commanders. You mentioned, Ted, 10 new starters on offense, bringing a whole bunch, you know, Adam Peters does a
offense
great job.
Offense and defense, awesome. Just overall,
But let's take a look real fast. I mean, you're talking on defense, Carlton Davis, Milton Williams, Harold Landry, Robert Spillane. You've got Will Campbell, Garrett Bradbury, you've got Morgan Moses, likely Steph Diggs, possibly a new starter at running back as well. You could be looking at, via free agency and draft, anywhere between 8 to 11 new starters on the New England Patriots as well, which, Dan, mathematically lines up with the whole 50% roster turnover. So, again, don't squash that dream. I don't want to play the part of the kid from the Banshees of Inisherin. Well, there goes that dream. It's not over yet. They haven't even kicked off freaking camp yet. Why not think that this team can turn things around and have better than a 32% chance to make the playoffs?
I would just, with that number, it was such a large number to read Mike Reese put in terms of the roster turnover. That's why I would advocate just be patient with this group in September. I know people are looking just pure matchup based and saying, oh, that's a 3-1 record before you get in and face the Bills. I would advocate for a little bit more patience with this group in September because of that turnover. Because those are so many moving parts that Fitzy just outlined to then try to gel by week one with teams who also view the Patriots as having a 32% chance of making the playoffs. Teams that also view the Patriots right now as a win on their schedule because of what they've done in past years. So I'm a little more hesitant to go as heavy into my expectations early, but I think get out of that stretch of games, you know, at 500 and maybe get through that Bills game and then you go, I think that's where we start to see some of the potential of this group.
If this team just, you know, hovered around 500, unlike the Celtics or unlike the Red Sox, when they hover around 500, it just, you want to pull your hair out.
Right.
But this team, I think, just kind of hang around 500, you know, with six games left in the season.
Yeah, exactly.
Five games left in the season. And hopefully, to me, the mark of a good team is a team that steadily improves as the season goes on, which I've always said that Gerard Mayo would still be the coach here if he won his last four games. He didn't win a game all the way up until the last 4 weeks of the season, and he went, reeled off four in a row. He'd probably still be the coach.
Right.
It's about how you play at the end of the season that to me matters, and so I feel like this team, with the quality of the coaching, will get better as the season goes on. So just, you know, I hear what you're saying. I mean, just a little rough kind of start. I see them going 3-1, and I look at, okay, Vegas has got, I know they got new head coach, they got a new quarterback. Miami, I think they're taking a step back. There's a lot of issues there. Tyreek Hill, you know, they just traded away Jalen Ramsey. The Steelers with Aaron Rodgers, come on, and then Carolina. So, but you give me 2-2 out of that start, I'll take that all day, and just give me 500 a ball for most of the season, and then look, can we get a strong finish to get to the 10 wins that I'm hoping that they get to?
I will also add that going from 98 to 99 with the St. Louis Rams, going from Amp Lee and June Henley at running back and Tony Banks and Steve Bono at quarterback to Marshall Faulk and Kurt Warner, slight upgrade.
Right.
Just a little bit of an upgrade. Just a little bit. 617-779-7937 to text into the program or give us a call, like Joe in Melrose, who wants to talk some of the Vegas odds on your Patriots. How are you, Joe?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, man?
Yeah, I think the optimism around the Patriots is because Vegas has favored them in 11 of 17 games. I mean, it's such a quarterbacks league, and I was playing golf with this Buffalo Bills fan. He pointed out to me that Buffalo is favored in all 17 of their games, and Kansas City is favored in 16 of the games. The only game Kansas City is an underdog is when they have to go play at Buffalo. So it's like right now Patrick Mahomes is like the Tom Brady of this era, and Josh Allen is like the Peyton Manning of this era. So the thing is, the Patriots are favored in 11 games because of Drake May. It's, you know, that's the reason. Everyone thinks he's going to take a huge step forward this season.
Thank you, Joe. Always appreciate the call. Do you think it's Do you think it's just Drake May? I like the comps regarding Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, but do you think it's just? I think it's more than just Drake May. I think it's I would say it's Vrabel and then May and McDaniels that has Vegas confident enough to put Pats.
I think that's right. And. You know, that's interesting. Joe says there's 11 games that they're favored in, and we all remember how many they were favored in the beginning of the season last year, right?
Yeah.
Zero.
And it's so one. Yikes. Or was it zero or was it one? Okay, zero. I thought maybe one. So zero. So, you know, I don't know. You can get, you know, mad at me for being optimistic, but the you know, Vegas has them winning, you know, favored in 11 games when they had them favored for none last year. So they're the ones that are being overly optimistic. But I just do think it is the belief in Vrabel, just like you just said, and the fact that Josh McDaniels is here with Drake May. A lot of guys that cover football see the special traits of Drake May. But I think I was listening to you guys yesterday, and it was, you know, basically I think you guys were having a discussion on what ultimately is Drake May going to be judged on, and I think you guys were right on. It really is going to come down to, did he win the football game or not?
Yeah.
Not how many yards. Not how many touchdowns he threw, not what was his percentage on third down. Did he win the game? And that's, look, I gave him a lot of slack last year, and I overlooked the fact that he was 1-9. I will not do that this year. This year he will be judged more critically, in my opinion, on wins and losses.
I would love to, Fitzy, be able to come away from a full season, because it's clear your defense is probably going to hold you in a lot of games as Drake kind of figures things out in year two and now year one under McDaniels and another year with a new offensive coordinator, whatever. I would love to come away from at least a couple of games and go, Wow, Drake bailed the defense out in that game. Drake balled out to the point where our defense didn't have to hold you under 20 points or hold you to two scores or whatever it is. If he can do that a couple of times where I'm winning mm-hmm. the game as the yep. Patriots because of my quarterback, yep. that's a huge step forward for me.
Real quick, Fitzy, I got to get this in. That's a great point, Dan. There's how many times last year, right before halftime, you go, okay, they got about a minute and a half and one timeout, and they run the ball on first down.
Right.
And we're all like, what the hell? They're basically pissing away an opportunity to score before yeah. halftime.
Just kneel right. it down if you're going to do that. Just give it to them.
They didn't treat every – and Tom Brady would have treated 1 second of time as an opportunity to stage a comeback and win a game.
Hey, John Madden will tell you that. Oh, yep. you know, that's – take a knee here, John. Wrong call, John. But you know who's the best at coaching the two-minute drill? Josh McDaniels.
Yeah.
Josh McDaniels is a genius when it comes to that one specific situation. Tom Brady was a genius. You know who looked like a genius? Was Mac Jones running the 2 minute. It was.
Do you remember how hype we all were, Ted, in the summer of 2021?
Preseason games when he's preseason running the 2 minute? Yeah.
I remember the Philadelphia game especially. It was a super hot and humid summer night.
Always.
Mac Jones came in against Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And in the second half, Josh McDaniels just let him run 2 minute drill.
Just 2 minute.
He looked awesome.
So my point is that to me, that one thing, if Drake May gets better coaching in the 2 minute drill, you know, they would have won two or three more games more last year than they did, I think.
That just especially if he has a more focused Steph Diggs by his side and at his disposal. Speaking of which, yesterday we offered a couple of takes on the state of affairs for superstar influencer Tom Brady and Patriots wide receiver one, we ask with question mark, Steph Diggs. Ted would like to weigh in on that, and we would love to have you weigh in as well at 617-779-7937. Let's catch you up first on everything else trending in the wide world of Boston sports and beyond. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Dan Ball.
You can listen to WEEI on your smart speaker.
Just say, play 93.7 WEEI.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
I think he wanted to be a family man at one point in time, and football killed his family life. And now you're left with this, the aging bachelor who, yes, is surrounded by a lot of hot women, but is there any substance in his life?
This is a good thing. Why? Because it is one distraction Stephon Diggs does not need, nor will he have to contend with, as he works his way back to being a dynamic receiver in the NFL and the leader of the Patriots offense.
And maybe I'm an idiot for this take.
Those were two of yesterday's three-point stances on WEEI Afternoons. The first one by Andy Hart, who accused Tom Brady of now being a sad dad, leaving a hollow life as an international playboy and world-famous hashtag influencer.
Nobody has it worse than Tom Brady. That's what we're all saying
here. Oh, my God. The brushback, including that with the guff that so Arcan dumb. Gave him and the things I heard from friends that I'm sure Andy did as well.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, okay. It was a great dichotomy of opinion, Ted. And then, of course, I postured, not just to pump myself up to get excited for the season, that Steph Diggs, who has since the breakup, I'll have you know, put out an awful lot of content on his YouTube channel, on practice fields, in interview rooms, on private planes, talking about how much football means to him and how he plans on taking this season, not for granted, but very, very seriously. So I said, hey, breaking up with Cardi B, getting out of that celebrity life and getting into the football limelight would be a good thing. Ted Johnson, you played with Tom Brady. You watched him win Super Bowls alongside yourself. And of course, you've had an opinion or two about Steph Diggs and the upcoming season with these Patriots. So let's go one by one. Dan, should we start with the sad influencer in Monaco that is the shirtless god hanging out with Kate Hudson and Dakota Johnson, Tom Brady?
I think that's exactly where we start.
First, was he really? I missed that. Hanging out with Kate Hudson?
No, dude.
On his yacht. Yeah, just him and those
Dakota
two.
Dakota Johnson?
Just hanging out, Kate talking about Kate what Hudson. It's like to be in that tax bracket that we'll never understand.
God, her stepdad was Kurt Russell. Please. Yes, and thank you.
Okay. That I did find that to be interesting because I tend to agree with Andy, not that I'm feeling sorry for Tom. It's not about that. It's just, but do I see a guy that perhaps is not living the life he maybe imagined? Yeah, I do. And it's based on this. Okay. It's based on the, you guys have heard me say that at times, I think Tom sounds disingenuous, inauthentic.
Saying what everybody wants to hear, not necessarily what he thinks.
And somebody who is that talks his, you know, for a living, and tells you things that I don't know, that I don't think he really feels, is someone that sounds confused to me,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't really know who he is. I get the sense Tom comes from this very stable, very connected family, where they're almost in a mesh family. Like a lot of these, they're very close,
mm-hmm.
but and I think they're all kind of in each other's business. Which, you know, I grew up in the most opposite family, and so I've always been jealous of those types of families. But there's a certain level of, you know, maybe it's not the exact dynamic you want, but that's better than what most people have, which is at least they all love each other, connected, a mesh, blah blah blah. And now he's got kids from different women. Some are married to, some he wasn't married
right.
to. You know, my guess is he, just like Andy said, I think he probably would prefer to be, quote unquote, a family man, but it runs contrary to this other life that he wants too, which is being the playboy and kind of, you know, running in certain circles. That's not congruent with stable family life. And so I think Tom's caught in this thing that's pulling both sides. He doesn't really know which one he wants to be right now. And so I can see Andy's point. I can see there being a little bit of a sadness to kind of the state of where he is. I'll be honest, and for a single dad, on holidays, it's the worst. You know, your holiday, what'd you do for the 4th? Well, my kids were with their grandparents. I wish they were with me, but, you know, it is what it is. Like, it's not... Yeah. I think the holidays for a single dad, it hits home. But the point Andy made was a good one in the sense I can see there being a sad. Do I feel sorry for him? No, because he's got all his money, and he's got all his fame, and he's got all his fortune, but he just hasn't found that, in my opinion, probably that true kind of life that he wants to live every day. It is still out of his grasp. And I think he's still searching for that life.
So maybe he steers into one direction more to try to fill a certain void that's being left by the other.
Correct.
If that makes enough sense.
And then he goes too much into that part,
right.
And it doesn't fulfill him. And then he's
and the pendulum him, keeps going back,
going
and,
back
forth
and
forth and back and forth
and back and forth until
man.
He eventually
I don't think he's recalibrated,
settles.
Ted. I don't think he has been able to find, like you said. This has to be Tom Brady 3.0, if you will. Like, there's Tom Brady before he became the GOAT.
Can I just tell you, Fitzy, Tom Brady's no different than the Ted Johnson, than a lot of football players. When they retire, they go, oh, crap, who am I? Who am I? And then people don't know how to treat you, and so you perceive how people view you in a way. It's like, well, they only knew you as a football player. Now you don't play football, so they don't want anything to do with you. There's a whole recalibration of who you are, and the longer you play football, look at Belichick. It's like now he doesn't know what to do with himself. It's almost like being out of that off-season, in-season, that ritualistic kind of way of living for so long is now that's not the case. It can really mess up even the most what you think well-adjusted guys are. And I think the longer you play, the more messed up you are when you retire. If you just play for a short time, you're still young. You get into the workforce. It's not that big of a deal. The transition from football to, quote-unquote, the real world is harder the longer you play.
And did you feel it go away? Is there still any part of you that's like, oh man, I like think about those athlete days and the routine and the kind of stability that brought?
I love it.
Come on,
yeah.
Teddy, strap him on. Let's go.
Yeah, I miss it.
It dissipates, but maybe it doesn't completely go away.
You're so comfortable with it.
Sure, sure, yeah.
You know, the way I talk to my colleagues was the same. The real world, I say that and HR is coming after me and, you know, you're getting reprimanded and you're off the radio for a day or two. Oh, crap. And it's just it's a whole different, kind of thing that you have to navigate in the quote unquote real world that you don't have to in when you're playing football, like Bill Belichick can attest to. Like, you see all the problems that have kind of arose in his life now that he's not an NFL coach anymore.
Yeah, and now he's going to beauty pageants in Maine and playing footsies on Instagram, which is just what we always thought he'd be doing in 2025. And I still maintain that if Tom Brady either announced his retirement after he almost threw the Lombardi into the waters outside of Tampa, or after his failed comeback from 27-3 when he had a bloody lip in the game, yeah, the divisional round against the Rams, like, that would, either one of those would have been incredible stamps. Like, see Belichick, see world. I did it. I won. And hey, guess what? I was capable of another incredible comeback. It was just a really bad call by who's the head coach now of the Tampa Bay? Todd Bowles.
Todd Bowles,
who's then defensive coordinator, to put a zero blitz in and not cut, and only put a safety deep on Cooper Kupp as well. But he played one more year. It broke everything up. And it, you know, well, look, any one of us would probably not hate to be on that yacht. But at the same time, he does look a little lost. And Ted, just real quick on my position that this could be a good thing for Steph Diggs, that he's now out of the line.
Well, hold on, Fitzy, real quick before you get to I want to just put a bow on the Brady stuff.
Go for it.
But I want to hear your thought on that because I have a thought. But Andy said this about TB12 yesterday. He said that football is what caused his divorce, and it's what's made him unhappy.
Yes.
And it's not football that's the problem. No. It's the ego. It's Tom wanting, you know, he wants – football gave him money and fame. Without football, he doesn't – he wants fame and money and to be in that upper echelon more than anything. Without football, he doesn't, but that's ego driven.
Mm-hmm.
It's ego that caused the divorce, not football. It's his ego that drives him to play football because of all the things that it brings him. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but my one little pushback to that, Ted, would be like he's got fame galore now. Like he's broadcasting, he's producing movies, he's in movies. He's in every seventh commercial that's on ESPN or during a football broadcast. He bought the card vault. He's the king of Fanatics Fest. I would say we get more Tom Brady. I almost even wonder, outside of like Kevin Hart and Pedro Pascal, if we haven't reached peak Tom Brady as well. So I think he's got the money, the fame, the visual recognition right now, more Twitter followers, more Instagram fans. He's been on Mr. Beast and done all those things. I just think that he's missing the psycho drive. Like he had that psycho drive. He pursued it to a point where it wrecked his marriage. And it's like, now what? So he's just grasping at everything.
The psycho drive.
Well, that's Fitz, you bring up an interesting point. Like, Ted, does he need to do the stuff that Fitzy's bringing up? Does he need to be an owner in the NFL? Does he need to be a businessman? Does he need?
No.
He's the greatest quarterback of all time.
And it's still not satisfying enough. The
ego is
he wants to be relevant.
Yeah.
He doesn't play football, but yet you see him all the time. Why? Because he wants to be relevant. He's so terrified. Belichick's the same way. They want to be more than just football players. They want to be people that are in your brains constantly, 24/7. Every time I'm on my Instagram feed, it's like some inspirational quote from Tom. It's like he's everywhere.
Yeah.
That's ego. Yeah. That's ego. And that tells me that it's ego that has driven him to a divorce more than, and if he is unhappy, to his unhappiness more than anything else.
All right, executive decision, guys. We were going to jump into Ted's movie club because we have a new cinematic assignment for the week. We're going to push that to odds and ends later in the show. So we will get our movie assignment for this week from Big Teddy J. But Chris J., Mike, and all who just loaded up the phone lines at 617-779-7937 will get to you on the other side. Plus, we'll get Teddy's take on if Steph Diggs will be more focused or not this season without Cardi B by his side. You are listening to WEEI Afternoons.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
I was standing 3 feet away from Scott Zolak when Brady threw the microphone and it bounced off him on that stage that famous January afternoon. Temperatures in the low 20s, 40,000 people strong.
That was me.
That was on me.
I was there.
Fitzy,
Tom,
hand of accountability.
Tom
that was on me.
Tom glanced at me and...
It was my way. Hey, Ted, it was my first Super Bowl rally I ever hosted. Come on, it was a big moment.
I hear you, man. I'm an a-hole.
No, you're not. No, Dan is, because now he's been poisoned by Stiz, and everyone has a great story.
Great story.
I swear. It's a great story. The temptation to just absolutely cluster F-bomb this show.
If you're going right. to be a storyteller, you got to come strong, bro.
Yeah. You got to. It's whether it's a great story or not, you got to be ready for it.
5 seconds in, I'm talking about how exciting it was to watch Brady throw the mic when he's breathing fire. But
uncalled
it's
for.
Ice.
Most of your great stories, though, are with Brady centric, right? I mean,
I mean, hey, that's
sure,
okay.
They should be.
Kraft, Belichick, Brady, and Fitzy. That's what they say. That's what the t-shirt
says. Whenever I was talking about how Ted autographed my grandmother's. Did you great story me, Ted, when I talked about Ted autographing my Stiz?
You can't great story on that one. That's grandmother's. Okay. That's a different thing, right. Man. No way.
Grandma's are
great
story.
Grandmother's what?
I was going to say, your
grandmother's. Did Ted autograph your grandma's
My grandmother's dong, yes, exactly.
All right, moving on.
Yikes. Well, that'll be one to say this afternoon took a turn in the 4 o'clock hour.
Hope grandma's
all right,
not listening.
I promised we would get to your phone calls at 617-779-7937.
Poor grandma.
Ted's Movie Club and Fitzy's grandma moving to the 5 o'clock hour in just a few moments. Plus, we'll get Ted's take on my idea that Steph Diggs is going to be more dialed in this season without all that glitz, glamour, and international hip-hopdom at his side. But let's go to the phones. Stanley, who we got first up?
Let's go with Mike in Connecticut.
Mikey in Connecticut. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
How you doing?
Good. So I can relate to what Ted was saying about how with Tom being in the NFL for so long and how he had to adjust to life. I was in the Navy for 10 years, and when I got out, it took me a few months to get used to civilian life. Like, there's certain things I couldn't say that I can't say in corporate.
Yep.
Because, like you said, HR will contact me. So as much as Tom is trying to figure out what he wants to do, eventually he has to. He's going to be 50 here in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Got to figure things out, man. You are the GOAT, but you're not the GOAT as far as, like, life after football. So got to get hot.
That's an interesting call, Mike. And you guys know that I found –
Thank you, Mike.
That the FBI make it's a mandatory kind of decoding, like when you
like
retire,
a cool down
you
kinda.
Have to go to this, I don't know, 2 week long kind of just process of learning how to integrate yourself back into regular life.
Wow,
it's mandatory. Every person, if anybody's in the FBI and wants to call in and verify this, I was told that one time.
What, just for like soldiers and stuff?
No, for FBI agents.
Oh, for agents.
Yeah.
Okay. So wait, Ted, can you just, that one caught me a little off guard. So what's
just
mandatory?
FBI agents have to go through a process of kind of, after they retire, learning how to kind of re-enter themselves into the kind of the real world. They have
humanity reclamation. Okay.
This may be a can of worms that we don't need to get into, but are there resources that the PA or the league provide players in terms of any kind of post-career reintegration, anything like that?
Yes, there are, and they get underutilized.
That was going to be my follow-up.
That's why
if they're
mandatory.
There, why don't we hear about
they
them
need
as
to
much?
It's almost like the FBI makes it mandatory. There's a reason it's mandatory. A lot of players don't have the cognitive power to use them.
Yeah, that's too bad. It should be tied to your pension or something like that. You wanna get the benefits of playing in the NFL. You need to go through this, and we promise it's gonna be for your own benefit in the long term.
Yeah,
that's too bad.
Is there anyone know if there's any sort of program you can enter into if you feel like you've peaked being on stage next to Tom Brady when he threw a microphone at Zoe?
WEEI afternoons, 2 to 6 p.m. here on Boston Sports Original.
Let's carry on with the calls, guys. Jay in North Carolina. What's up, Jay?
Hey, guys. I wish there were a program to prevent someone from becoming an idiot, but it's too late for me. Anyway,
actually, you're welcome here anytime.
Idiot's welcome here.
You mentioned ego. You mentioned ego. And I said to myself, such a small word to cause such major problems. Mm-hmm. But talk about the longevity of the football players. Do you guys remember Brian Bosworth, who collected $25 million for a signing bonus and then said, thanks, fellas, I don't want to play because football is too rough, but thanks for the $25 million. He was one of my heroes. That and Hawk and Lube. We offered him $5 million, and he said, no, thanks. My family's more important. But my question to you was this, guys. I'm sorry to digress. But Mike Vrabel, has he given any indication of the progress of his team? I know you probably won't see anything until we get right into the trenches, but do you have any insight?
Well, I'll tell you this, Jay. Look,
thanks for the call, Jay.
Brian Bosworth was one of my favorite players. I got to meet him. Brag, little story. I got a good story, but I'm not going to do it.
great story.
But I used to get the two lines inside. Just on the answer, the question to the Vrabel, giving his basically what he state of the kind of I don't know what say the union address on what he thinks the team is. He won't say it. My feeling is he feels pretty good about. Just compared to where this team was when he started versus where they are now, I can't imagine them doing more in an off season than what the Patriots did. As far as revamping the coaching staff, changing all the players out. I mean, two-thirds of this team is new. The free agency, the draft, I feel like they did as much as they could do in the short amount of time he's been here.
And to your point, the verbiage, Fitzy, that he seems to use is just, we're working. We're continuing to work. We're working every day. We're going to work. We're going to work. So I think as much as we're going to observe our own takeaways during training camp, what we'll hear from the coach himself is, we're continuing to work. I like the work we're doing. Those are probably the extent of the crumbs we're going to get.
Yes, and let's go to one final call this break, gentlemen. Allison in Cambridge, one of our favorites here on EEI Afternoons. Hello, Allison.
Hey, guys. I know exactly what I want to say about Tom Brady, but I just have to say, going back to the past, the Patriots, it just kills me to hear it. I was not into football, and I got taken up with the Patriots when the Patriots were 7-5 in the 2001 season, and I didn't get to see them lose for a long time after that, and all of you were just, I loved you, Ted Johnson, as a player. All of you were just such great players, and I just loved you. It was about the people, and it was just the spirit. What I think about Tom Brady, I always felt he just wanted to keep playing. He loved football. That it's like artists. It's not fair that people who are musicians and writers and visual artists, we're able to keep going, you know, really our whole lives. We can live, and it must be so sad for you guys. I always feel like your art is playing your sport, and it can only be a certain limited time, and Tom Brady pushed that. I think what happened was Bill Belichick, I think that he had Bernie Kosar in his head, which was just ridiculous because Tom Brady wasn't Bernie Kosar, but it's like our families of origin, we stay stuck with things, and it's very hard for us to accept that our new families are different. But I also think that it was Bill Belichick's ego more than Tom Brady's ego. And I think that also, but basically I think that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick especially, but maybe Robert Kraft a little bit, I think they got in over their heads emotionally. And I think that so many things, I think that John Henry, the reason the Red Sox are where they are, is he cut off from the team emotionally at a certain point. Do you remember that he used to travel with the team when he first bought it?
Yeah.
He wore that funny big hat. And then John Lester was like a child to him. And so the fact that they lowballed him, he was convinced that they should, and that he was connected to so many players. And just one more thing, because with David Ortiz being so the whole thing, everyone's saying that David Ortiz's life was saved by the Red Sox. Remember, they actually flew him out of. Yeah.
Yes.
And so anyhow, this is a great show, and there's so much stuff here. Take care, guys.
Thank you, Allison.
Well, best thing we'd love to offer up, Allison.
But Allison's right. It's like Giselle saying, you're an artist, and saying, you know what, you can't do art anymore. Sorry. Football was his palette, and he was a Rembrandt. And so what, he can't play it anymore because he, I don't know, he doesn't spend enough time with the kids in the fall. I don't know. Find that hard to believe, but that's me.
Well, speaking of fine art, it looks like your Boston Red Sox are in the middle of a renaissance themselves. Are we going to finally get Ted Johnson to hop on the hype train with us? Roman Anthony wants to go yard again just to prove our point. Winners of 6 of 7, 4 in a row, and they're looking pretty, pretty, pretty good tonight. We'll get Teddy Johnson's thoughts on your Boston Red Sox in the 5 o'clock hour here on WEEI Afternoons.